Welcome to Beeline, your 95 BFM news podcast, delivering straight up news.
Kia ora and welcome to Beeline. This episode looks at the importance of representation in the arts. As an audience member, I'm constantly searching for people like me in all of the art I consume. There's something really special about identifying with a character in a movie or hearing someone sing about experiences that you've had yourself. For those from marginalised and minority backgrounds, however, representation can be hard to come by. In this week's episode of Beeline, I talk to three artists about how important representation is to them and what they do to improve representation within their communities. First, I spoke to art director and founder of Beings.co, Leon Bristow, starting out by asking what kind of work Beings does.
So Beings is a directory that represents POC, like people of colour, rainbow and disabled talent, and our goal or purpose is to elevate visibility, accessibility and opportunities to the talent. And so it's quite a wide range that we work in the way of like fashion shows and then advertising and feature films and short films. So there's the creative industry, and then there's so many disciplines within that we can help assist in.
Yeah, and what inspired, I guess, the foundation of Beings as an organisation?
Well, I started out as an actor myself, and I loved the performance, and it is a tough gig. It's a really hard job because, you know, you have to be available kind of the next day for an audition, and then you don't get paid for the time, and you're spending so much money on acting workshops and all of that stuff. And then I ended up going into advertising and working as an art director now, and that's when I started seeing a lot of the processes behind the scenes about how talent are picked for roles, especially like casting for ads. And it opened up my mind because you think as an actor you get a role based on whether you're good or, you know, you fit the role or not, but there's so much more conversation that happens in the background, and some of those conversations I didn't agree with. And I just didn't think those processes were the right processes or appropriate processes to be casting talent, especially when it's around identities and how people identify, especially in this day and age. So the kind of thought came from, well, what is there that we can find the right talent? And it's difficult. It's a difficult process. And I talked to a casting director, and he said sometimes he'll brief something in and he won't get the right talent back for that brief.
Right.
And so then he'll have to brief it in again, and he still won't get the right talent back, knowing full well that the right talent is there. And so it just makes extra work for them. And so a lot of the time they're just like, it's easier to just not.
Yeah.
Essentially, they're like, it's easier to not cast diversity. Mm. And that's a problem. It's so hard and so much extra effort to cast the right talent authentically, that it's taking away opportunities. So I just wanted to streamline that and make it easier.
And a lot of people, you know, when we're talking about diversity and when we're talking about representation, it gets talked about a lot in terms of like decision making and in terms of leadership positions. How important is diversity and representation in the arts?
I think it's so important. I think it's so interesting. Arts is so big, and there's the art space when I was like an actor, and we work, you know, you do it like there's so much passion in it, and you kind of do it with not much money behind it, but you do it because you love it so much. And then there's the art space and the commercial world as well, and we get paid to you know, to make ads and come up with ideas every day from 9 to 5, and there's so different worlds. But regardless, it's so important to have representation in both those spaces. And I think in that commercial corporate space, it's missing a lot. And I think it's not just about having representation on screen or authenticity on the face of things. You need to have it in the processes, because it really informs the final product. So especially in, for example, advertising, it's important to have the right people that are working on those jobs, especially when it comes to identity and representation, so that the right decisions are made and informed to represent that identity as authentically and accurately as possible. And then that, as a like a result of that, people see themselves on screen more authentically, and it's also teaching others who might not associate with those communities what that identity really is, as opposed to pigeonholing or stereotyping or exaggerating.
Yeah, and a bit more on that, you know, representation for young people especially. What kind of benefits do young people get from seeing representation and from seeing representation of their own groups on the screen or in acting or wherever?
I think it's definitely beneficial and inspiring, but it also, for me, from my perspective, it shows that there's space for us in those places. And I think that's really important, because then that informs everything, you know. Again, it informs the processes, and if we can show that younger generation or younger people that there is space for them in these places that they want to go, then they can keep pursuing their passion or what they like, and pursuing it knowing that they will be accepted, or that others will embrace them as well. So I think that's the importance of making sure we have more diversity in those spaces as well, and we need to show that there is like space for them too.
Yeah, and what kind of barriers are there, I guess, to representation at the moment in these spaces?
It's so hard. There's so many little barriers, and a big part of beings is showing the spectrum of these identities as well. And for example, like for me, I'm Māori, Samoan, and then Dutch as well. And I've always kind of said I probably wouldn't be cast as a pre-colonial Māori, but I am regardless Māori.
Right.
And by having beings, you can choose the ethnicity Māori on the directory, and it will show all the people that identify as Māori, and it's not just one look or one way or one type of behaviour. There's this spectrum, and so I think that's what the industry, some of the barriers is around people who don't have those lived experiences are informed elsewhere, that, you know, through this notorious history of like pigeonholing about what Māori is, or what it is to be queer, or what it is to have ADHD, or like be in a wheelchair, when really the people that like know best are the communities, and that's, you know, important to bring them in. That's why it's important to have them in those spaces and making decisions, because then they know the right kind of way to go about it, as opposed to feeling like this is Māori, or this is, you know, that pigeonholing. So that's just one example. There's other examples. It's gatekeeping, lots of gatekeeping. And I remember one time we were casting for a queer couple, and we had all these thumbnails in front of us of talent. And one of my colleagues was like, well, let's cast her because she looks queer, and let's cast her because she looks queer.
Right.
And I was like, I had to say, I put my hand up and I was like, have we actually asked for queer talent?
Mm.
And they're like, oh, no. And it was kind of, the thought hadn't even occurred to them to even do that. And we were already a couple of casting, you know, rounds in, and I think we had one left like within the budget. And so that's when we asked for queer talent, and we got the right queer talent, and we got a queer couple. And, you know, it just comes down to having those people in the room. And then as a result, we're able to get authenticity and also give money back to those communities as well. But yeah, there's so much, like, I could write a book.
If you had to give one piece of advice out to young people right now, I guess looking for that kind of representation and wanting to see that kind of representation, maybe in the career that they're looking for in the arts, what kind of advice would you give them?
I feel like a big thing that has helped me is to find the right people.
Mm.
I think earlier in my career, I would probably shapeshift or evolve or feel like I would have to adapt to the system. And for me, then I found kind of my people in the career who were like Māori, Samoan, queer, and we all lifted each other up because we were in the same situation.
Yeah.
And they gave me the confidence to feel like I belonged in this space, and that also from an identity perspective, that I had something to offer to the space that others couldn't bring. And I think that's what was really important. And when I kind of, when the penny dropped for that, then I was able to kind of walk into the space more confidently and be like, wow, we've heard like a lot of these same perspectives. I can give you my perspective as the only one in this space. And I think it's very valid and it's very needed for consideration as well. And I found that through finding the right people who were there to like lift me up as well. So I would definitely recommend find your tribe.
I then spoke to musician and presenter of Little Gay Inn, Jason Parker, about the importance of representation in the music industry. When you were younger, before you were really into the music industry as a performer, as an audience member, did you feel like you were represented in the music industry and by artists in Aotearoa or internationally?
My introduction into feeling represented in through artists was like through pop stars like Lady Gaga.
Right.
Specifically Lady Gaga, like she was huge. I still remember, like, I grew up in Waipukoro, which is a farming community in central Hawke's Bay, and the first time I heard Bad Romance, I remember where I was because it was just like so, it made me feel like alive and it made me feel seen. I grew up listening to Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears, and I also grew up in a time where being gay wasn't as accepted. It was kind of still something to be ashamed of, more so than now. So I was listening to that stuff a lot in secret. In New Zealand media, like, I guess the first thing that I ever saw was like queer characters on Shortland Street.
Right.
And it was through television. Like, I definitely used to be like on the internet, on dial-up internet, Googling like queer or gay. I would have been writing gay. We didn't even use the word queer then, like gay TV shows. And so that was my introduction to seeing people who might be like me. And also like Adam Lambert on American Idol. Watching someone who was so overtly camp was honestly like life-changing for me.
And then thinking about getting into doing music yourself, you know, we hear a lot about barriers to, you know, people from diverse backgrounds and people from the queer community getting into the performing arts. Did you face, you know, any particular challenges getting into the music industry as a queer person?
I personally, the only challenges I've faced as a queer person is seeing like myself on stage and seeing myself in audiences. And that's why I started Little Gay Inn in the first place. But I don't feel like being queer has been a barrier for me. It's actually, it's been a superpower for me in a way where I just like wear it on my sleeve. I am exactly who I am. You know exactly what you're getting. And that's taken me a long time to like be proud of. But being in the music industry, I really wanted to that to be part of like my story. I didn't want to hide away or like shy away from my queerness. And yeah, I feel like that has worked in my favor.
And I mean, that's some of the philosophy that goes into Little Gay Inn, as you mentioned earlier. Can you talk a little bit more about that, the philosophy behind, you know, starting that up and what goes into making it happen?
So Little Gay Inn is a queer music showcase where we've run it for 3 years now, twice a year. And I started it because I was going to a lot of gigs when I first moved up to Auckland. I was trying to meet people in the industry and trying to put my name out there. And I was just noticing that at New Zealand artists, which I love New Zealand music so much, I'm such a huge fan and there are so many incredible artists, I was noticing that the audiences weren't very queer. As opposed to going to something like, say, Lizzo or Charlie XCX, where I'm like, the queers are showing up. Queer people love music. It's part of our culture to dance and to feel like really deeply connected to artists. But for some reason, there felt like a disconnect between New Zealand artists and their audiences not necessarily being queer.
Yeah.
So I was wondering what I could do about that. I would love a queer audience, you know. I feel like the people who listen to my music our allies are queer, and that's where I started Little Gay Inn. It's not a big gay out, it's a little gay inn. It's somewhere where queer people can come and feel safe. They can meet up with other queer people and see themselves not only on stage but also in the audience. And the vibe is just very uplifting, very wholesome, and it's one of the best things I've ever done. Like, I love making music, but doing this show, every time I learn something new, and I just feel like I feel really grateful to be part of this community.
And then, like, getting into that, you know, the building of a community and the importance of seeing representation like that for an individual, and also, you know, being part of that larger group, how do you, I guess, could you speak to that, the importance, and how important is it to you, and how important is it to your audiences?
It's the most important thing. To be a part of a community and to see yourself in art and in culture. For a long time, queer people just, like, we didn't get there at all. And so now that we have the opportunities to create things for ourselves and be seen, I think it's really important. And I am about to do Little Gay Inn in New Plymouth, which is the first time I'm taking it out of Tāmaki. And to me, that is what Little Gay Inn is really about. It's about queer representation. You know, there are queer clubs in Auckland. There are queer artists. There is a queer space here, but when you travel out of the main centres of New Zealand, it gets really, really isolating for queer people. And as, like, someone who grew up in rural New Zealand, I really, really know what that feels like, and know that feeling of having to leave to find your community. And so being able to take this and give it to people who are still in those communities and see how that affects their day and, like, makes them feel seen and heard. I'm beyond excited to be able to do that.
Yeah. And if we're thinking about now moving forwards into the future of, you know, improving representation, improving, you know, the access to community that you mentioned there, what are the kind of, you know, changes you'd like to see within the music community or within the arts community more broadly?
I mean, the main barrier, I think, is funding, financing these projects. We've got a lot of queer people with a lot of talent, and they are ready to bring their shows, like, all over New Zealand. It's just figuring out how we can fund them to come to not only, like, the main centres, but also to move into these smaller places and making funding more accessible to people. There's a lot of hoops you have to jump through to get funded for anything. That's actually what's great about Auckland Pride. They have funded a few of my Little Gay Inns, which has just been so insane, so amazing. And they make the application process really easy and also really helpful. If I've got any questions, they'll help. So I think that is the main barrier, is just figuring out, it's expensive to tour a show. You don't want to lose money, you know,
on a
show, but also, is bringing art to these places in New Zealand more important than money? Yeah, it is. So, yeah, I think that's the main hurdle, but self-belief and knowing that there are people who are there and who will show up if you go makes it easier to just, like, do.
And then lastly, if you've got, you know, a message to give out there for someone who's maybe in a similar position to what you were in, you know, looking for that representation, looking for someone out there in the arts community especially who can provide that representation for them, what would that message be?
Reach out. Like, Instagram, social media, people are literally a DM away. And in my experience, people genuinely want to help. They genuinely want to see people thrive in the arts. Other artists love collaboration, love community. So if you are feeling like you're not part of a community, find people who you think that you enjoy and just reach out to them, and eventually someone will get back to you, and that's how it starts. Honestly, just, like, be proud of yourself, be gay, be camp, be queer, be feminine, and, like, do not shy away from being yourself, because, like, there are too many of everyone else.
Finally, I spoke to Claudia Jowett, an artist and maker working as a project manager for Arts Makers Aotearoa.
I think in terms of coming out of, because I went straight out of high school into art school, that the people I was predominantly being educated about were white male, European, American painters. I mean, there definitely was a more of a push and a recognition of Aotearoa artists, but I still think the it's changing over time, but the institutional rhetoric for a long time was based on looking outside of the Pacific. So I think that is slowly shifting and changing. So in terms of my own quote-unquote journey as a maker, as a bit of an overused word, I think that as I engaged more with the amazing makers that were already present and had already been doing their thing here in Aotearoa, of Māori and Pacific descent, I started to realise the value in exploring that more and the importance of doing that more. And so that shifted and changed in my own work as well. And my own priorities as an artist and working in the community, and then the mahi I do for money like what I choose to do.
And can you speak to that in a little more depth, I guess? How does representation and, you know, your thoughts around representation in the art space influence the work you do?
I think because being a maker as well, I think it's that idea of like what actual meaningful representation means, because I think there is this thing that it can be a little bit, and again, a slightly overused word, tokenistic, or a gesture towards we're being inclusive, but that isn't just showing up, you know, doing a show during Pride or doing a show during Matariki, or it's this sustained and continued idea of inclusion and it being the norm as opposed to the exception, I think. And also this idea that there isn't one form of, like for me, that's particularly relevant, one idea of what Pacificness looks like as well, particularly with, it's such like a multiplicity of voices in the Pacific. Like the rhetoric here is quite Polynesian dominant, of course, but there's Melanesia, there's Micronesia, there's also the diasporic people as well. Like it's, and the people that are mixed, you know, and like what that looks like. So I think there's this sometimes idea that you tick a box and it's done.
And then thinking about also your work with Art Makers Aotearoa, can you speak to that a little bit, how that organisation works to create representation and build on representation in the art community?
I think it's that, again, that thing of like a sustained idea of all voices and representing different types of makers from different backgrounds that aren't just in Tāmaki, Makaurau, or Pōneke, because, you know, this can be quite dominant on the main centres as well. And also this idea of, like, that it isn't just quote-unquote fine art as well, particularly when you look at Indigenous practices as well, that their making is also really important. So I think that's also in the title, Arts Makers Aotearoa, that it's not just this idea of, like, what an artist, that there's a very small category that fits into that. I think also the advisory has a diverse background too, with Judy Dar, Zoe Black, Mark Harvey, Sian Torrington, Vic Walsh. Yeah, that we represent a wide variety of backgrounds. You know, but there's always a thing where you can do something better as well.
And thinking about, I guess, the barriers to representation in the art community, you know, we hear about barriers to representation, things making it difficult for people from marginalised or minority backgrounds making it in these spaces. Are there significant barriers in the art community, and what would you like to see moving forward?
I think there still are. If you look at who the dominant voices are, like you look at dealer galleries still too, I think there's a long way to come in like who's being represented, or that there's one or two galleries that will cater to Māori or Pacific voices. You know, this idea that it's not like you know, we need a Māori artist or we need a Pacific artist, that it's just seamlessly interwoven. There's always, you know, more to do there in terms of representation of women as well, queer voices, a multiplicity of queer voices too, that there's not just one queer artist. You know, there's always more growth to do in that as well. And who is getting to make the decisions, I think, is also really important as well. And that there's advisory for what that representation looks like, you know, as well, like proper advisory. Because like I was saying, it's, you can't just have one person to represent an entire community.
Yeah, and then speaking on the outcomes, I guess, why do you guys fight for representation? Why do you guys work to do that? What are the outcomes for people in the audience, people as artists?
I think one of the main things, I mean, Artsmakers Aotearoa was pushing for a long time for, you know, sort of grew out of pushing for resale royalties, because I think there's this idea too that artists will do stuff for exposure, but exposure doesn't pay the rent, you know. Obviously, like, how do we keep going, and particularly in communities too where you're supporting family, you're supporting, you know, it's not just this individualistic approach. It's like you've got to pay the bills to keep going. So I think Artsmakers Aotearoa kind of grew out of that idea too, and like getting fair artist fees as well from institutions, because that's something that's again can be quite a lot of work for not a lot of cash, you know. And that's, we lose so many amazing artists, makers and creatives to having to go get work and then having no time to make, you know. And unfortunately, I think this government isn't prioritizing that as well in their current Amplify strategy as well, that's asking us to look more to private funding, as if we're not already doing that. Yeah. You know, and the reliance on CNZ is huge at the moment. It's a particularly difficult time, and that affects marginalised communities more as well. So you lose more of those voices as well. So it feels like this time at the moment is more important than ever to keep those people in the industry.
Speaking on that a little bit further, what kind of changes would you like to see from like local and national government to you know, support the your communities in creating more art?
I think that thing of like creating, it's funding. It really comes down to funding. Like, there's prioritizing those communities and funding, which, you know, you can see from CNZ's strategy that there are, that does happen, but it's also like the opportunities are few and far between. So we all fight for them hard, you know, and you set up this competitive funding model when really we kind of need to kind of sort of work together to keep it going. It's a hard model to sustain, and it's a hard for organisations to continue when you are working on a yearly contestable funding model. Like, how do you create sustained change when you don't even know if you're going to be here in 12 months? That's really difficult. So I think this idea of investing in longevity and sustained advocacy through funding models, it's a hard and a big ask. But you look overseas and you think, what? Like, the fact that we didn't have a resale royalty policy for so long, and that was already happening overseas, you know, in Australia and Europe, and even like advocacy platforms for artists. You know, there was Artist Alliance before us, but then funding dried up. You know, like, it's this thing of like sustained investment, because if you get a government that isn't prioritizing the arts, all of it dries up and it takes years for it to reestablish itself again. And also, like, a really basic thing is like space for artists to make work.
Yeah,
how do we afford that in this economy? Like, that's really basic but so needed.
Yeah. If you're thinking about, you know, a young artist who might be listening to this, and, you know, thinking about those barriers to representation, as we discussed earlier, what advice would you give them about, you know, working and continuing in their artist career?
Well, funnily enough, I teach on the professional practice paper at AUT as part of the Bachelor of Visual Arts, and this idea of, like, what is professional practice? How do you maintain practice? How do you keep going? It's a thing that I don't want to be doom and gloom about, but you do have to sort of be your own hustler a little bit. And I think the people that continue on can sort of adapt, change, keep going, work other jobs, keep and sort of ride the wave, because it is really up and down. And I think having also communities and people within those communities that support you is really important. A group of makers, your whānau, like, it does kind of take a village. Like, it isn't an individualistic pursuit ultimately, even though it can look like that at times, because it takes a lot of support. And I think that thing of like keeping going and not losing faith at the first funding rejection, and having a really strong peer group of like-minded people, they will keep you going. It is ultimately like worth it, but it's not necessarily worth it monetarily, but it isn't just about that. And I think when you make those small changes, you start to see things happening, and slow positive shifts, you know, we can kind of uplift each other. I don't know whether that sounds a little bit corny, but it's like there's got to be a bigger reason to keep doing it, because it can be a real grind. But there are moments of like great joy and there's moments of despair. But I think ultimately if I was in an office job, you know, it's we'd kind of doing it for some other reason.
Yeah.
But I think when you start to see those incremental shifts and changes towards a more positive, inclusive and represented community, it's like, oh, there it is, you know.
That was Beeline. Thank you to all of our guests. Art director and founder of Beings.co, Leon Bristow. Musician and presenter of Little Gay Inn, Jason Parker. And artist and project manager for Arts Makers Aotearoa, Claudia Jowett. You can find more information on each of our guests and their organisations in this episode's description. Stay tuned for next week's episode of Beeline, where we talk about Bird of the Year. Ka kite.
Thanks for listening to Beeline, your 95 BFM news podcast, delivering straight up news.